David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks, and welcome to Marvel Noise episode 343. I'm your host, Steve Raker, sequestered down in the comic book bunker, trapped in a dungeon of my own design. This episode will humor the guys and have Andrew and Kevin on for our fourth, I think, installment of classic New Warriors issues. It's 90s comics theater, boys and girls. Marvel Noise is part of the Happy Deliberate Noise Network family of podcasts. You can find new episodes and a handy drop-down menu for archived old episodes over on marvelnoise.com, and get new episode announcements and see images on our Marvel Noise Facebook and Twitter feeds. And your feedback there is always welcome. I hate to be wishing the summer away, but I sure am looking forward to a return to normalcy and again attending the Baltimore Comic Con this coming October 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the Baltimore Convention Center, conveniently located right in the tourist trap that is the Inner Harbor of Baltimore. Details are on BaltimoreComicCon.com. It looks to be a fantastic, comic creator-heavy show, as has been their tradition. Frank Miller, Bendis, Chaykin, Cliff Chang, Frank Cho, Alan Davis, Mitch Gerards, Greg Hildebrandt, Gene Ha, King, Kitson, the Linsners, Bob McLeod, Don Rosa, the Simonsons, Joe Staton, Tim Truman, Mark Waid, and it's not at all hyperbole to say, and many more. Get your tickets now, or later, but get them. I recently read Marvel Number One, which is a new ongoing anthology book in the Busick Ross Marvels style. And of course, it's appropriate that Marvel Number One is under an Alex Ross cover. Inside the book, there are four pages of an Alex Ross painted nightmare framing sequence. He's like our host, the gravedigger, or the watcher here. Then there is an 11-page Spider-Man versus the Rhino story by Frank Espinoza. And then the main event, it's 14 pages of an Avengers tale by Kurt Busiek and Steve Rude, called The Boy and the Brute. It takes place around, I think it's around Avengers issues 6, 7, or 8 there, after they've uncovered Cap and after the Hulk split. But Rick Jones stuck around. Well, that made the Hulk angry, and, you know, you wouldn't like the Hulk when he's angry, especially this one. This is the early, brutish, but much more verbal Hulk than later iterations. He's mischievous, a planner. The Hulk attacks the Avengers to take back Rick, and during the scuffle, an image projector that had been introduced earlier in the sequence, of course, lands on the Hulk's head, and the Hulk creates constructs of hulked-out Avengers that then attack on his behalf alongside him. It's the old, oh yeah, you and what army? Well, this one. There's a Hulk Giant Man, a Hulk Wasp, a Hulk Iron Man, and Hulk Thor, plus the Hulk himself, versus the Avengers. He calls them the Hulkvengers and cries, "Disassemble!" as they charge the Avengers proper. What fun. And all beautifully rendered by Steve Rude, who's totally channeling 60s Kirby and making it work. Speaking of Steve Rude, I was fortunate enough to get on his sketch list for a remote con sketch opportunity during this crazy viral crisis. I requested a Galactus and a Sue Storm. His wife Janelle said he only does the Kirby versions of Marvel characters. And they were finished and mailed to me in a week's time. Nothing but love for the dude. This Galactus is incredible. I'll make sure to share over on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Oh, and the Marvel Next-ish blurb boasts stories by Dan Brereton, Eric Powell, and Paulo Rivera, and has an Alex Ross original Black Widow image. You know, the one with the cape, the mask, the fishnets, Andrew's favorite. And speaking of the LA Rabbit, let's get him and Kevin on.
All right, Marvel Noise entities, listeners, fans, we're back. By hook and by crook, we are going to make this new Warriors coverage a thing.
I like that one, Andrew.
We got to get to the good ones. We're almost to the good ones.
Yes. There are the good ones.
For people
Okay, not everyone we cover this episode is a good one. I should specify.
These were pretty good ones, though.
For new listeners, we have started our coverage of the new Warriors. We went back to their very first appearance in Thor, and we're reading along and going to recreate that experience, living in the 90s.
I think everyone wants to feel like they're living in the 90s right about now.
And we, as before, we're sort of set up in a different way. I, this time, went out and purchased the omnibus, because the new Warriors, I think I'd read some of these issues, but it was right about the time Andy was taking a hiatus from comics. My finances were such that the new comic was not in my budget, and the 90s really weren't my aesthetic. Like, I didn't really mind them, but I found it was turning to a way that didn't interest me as much. So for a variety of financial and aesthetic reasons, I bowed out. But Kevin was a big New Warriors fan, so he's anchoring. And Super Steve, much like with our Thunderbolts coverage, dipped in and out as it amused him.
I bought issue number one because, well, quite frankly, Thunderbolts issue number one was so good and had the big twist at the end and everything, so I wanted to see what they would do here, and I could not. I mean, I'm a big Nova fan from the old series that I picked up off the shelves as a wee lad in the 70s and early 80s as they finished up the story in FF and ROM. And I just could not get over the depiction of Nova, the kid Nova, the costume, the coloring, the different power set slightly, the attitude, the whole deal. I was very turned off. And I didn't pick up another issue until issue number 10, which is the third issue we'll cover tonight. And pretty much for the cover, it drew me to it for obvious reasons, and wanted to check out what the Hellions were going to do with these characters. And then I stuck around because the subplot reached its reached ahead, and the next storyline that we'll cover on the next segment is the one that I keep jokingly call the good one, because that's the first arc that I actually read of this series at all.
I was still reading these as back issues. I remember going around shop to shop trying to find all the new Warriors issues.
Nice.
Well, we're going to steal from our Thunderbolts coverage. And in that, traditionally, Kevin would kind of set the table for where we are. As keen-eared listeners know, we kind of left off in the middle of some hard choices. We had hard choices ourselves as to where to divide our coverage, but we split it. So, Kevin, it's the mid-90s. We all are, you know, enjoying the explosion. The internet is looming in front of us.
It is.
Where do we find our new Warriors?
I mean, the devils aren't at the doorstep, right?
Not at this church.
I love all the video game ads in here, too. Like, you open up the issue. I know that this is getting a little ahead of myself, but there's a game by Ultra Games, Skate, Ski, or Die, Chill, or Be Chilled. And then there's a penguin walking around. Great stuff.
Well, the 90s were extreme.
Yeah. I mean, It is the 90s, but it's not the 90s in the same way that, like, the Image founders are doing their books, like, the 90s. Like, I would say it's even though Bagley is stylized, it's the 90s comes through this book more in, like, its themes and extreme measures rather than necessarily hardcore through the art and storytelling.
I may disagree when we reach the second part of our coverage today, but anyways, we are on issue 8, Kevin. So where are we? What's going on? Who are the New Warriors? What's happening?
Who are the New Warriors? Well, as the beginning of this issue says, Night Thrasher, mysterious weapon against crime. Namorita, hybrid Atlantean. Kid Nova, man, they need to get rid of that kid. The Human Rocket, Marvel Boy, telekinetic fury. Firestar, mutant master of radiation. Speedball, bouncing bundle of energy. And I don't know if you knew this, guys, but together, they are the next generation in super entertainment.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe I'm less... I feel like they're still finding their way. The one character I appreciate the most, I think the art team has captured Speedball pretty well. Like, I like how he looks when he's in his power and how his character feels the most developed to me at this point. But they're still working on, you know, Teen Wolverine and the rest of these guys figuring out. We left off in the middle of the Hard Choices segment where the team is split. We have Night Thrasher facing off against the Punisher with his former dalliance silhouette. Is that what we're going to call her? As far as their relationship?
Like the yogurt?
Yes. And so they were... it was a standoff between a character we last visited during our Sable coverage. The Tiger Man, who Steve... Yeah. I remember from our coverage, Steve mimicking his excellent dialogue.
I like all these covers, too. Like, when I'm digging through the bins, I'm like, the Punisher is shooting Night Thrasher. Like, it's all... To me, it was all interesting stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this all looks exciting.
And the rest of the team is down in Brazil chasing after Speedball's mother. And they're going to face off against Force of Nature, who we previewed last time. So it's a split storyline, but I like that. We're still in the fun time where they're running a bunch of plots. Night Thrasher has two mentors, are we calling them?
Handlers?
Handlers.
Yeah, like one of them that's more...
He's got like a cable-type mentor.
More friendly. One of them's more friendly, and one of them has a sense of menace about them.
Yeah,
but the housekeeper. The in quotes, housekeeper.
They still serve as mother and father figures for him, though.
Yeah.
So we open up on issue 8 with the Punisher shooting at Night Thrasher, who uses his armored skateboard as defense.
Awesome. The Punisher considers, wow, a skateboard's real handy. Maybe I should get one.
Oh my gosh, and this it's a shield, it's a weapon, it's also a sweet ride. Is there anything this thing can't do?
I really think they missed their chance to do product placement here and have some skateboard company do it. But I feel like the Punisher's characterization, this is a Nisienza Bagley, Malstedt, and others, and it takes a village. And the fight sequences and portrayals are fine. This is the era of the Punisher when he's really into tech and has a ridiculous headband for no reason. So the battle van is, you know, all kinds of high tech, and he's got high tech cameras and everything. But the characterization of him as he's so goofy with the skateboard thing, and oh my, who is this wonder kid?
What it is.
We already bought the issue. Like, you don't need to sell us on
But they are still trying to sell us on. Night Thrasher's the only new character in the New Warriors, and he's the one who's kind of brought the band together. So this opening sequence of them fighting is told from the Punisher's point of view, which is a curious choice since it's a New Warriors book. But then I realized they're doing it so that he can be in awe, you know, that we can have this established character be in awe of the new guy and how cool he is and sell us readers on this new character.
Well, I was certainly buying it, Steve. But part of that is also I love the War Journal diary format too. So
I like that, but just the like the headband and the armband and the straps and pouches is not a Punisher.
I mean,
I don't mind the goofy tech, but the aesthetics of that design is just not the Punisher I like. That the headband particularly seems silly.
And it's such a contrivance too, because he's think of his whole motivation here is just he wants to inquire to Silhouette about her siblings, you know, gang dealings or whatever, or you know, illegitimate businesses or whatever the case may be. And to do that, he's like doing this whole gonna kill, you know, Night Thrasher. Then he does all this research on them, then like comes back after him, and he's like almost killing a priest, and he's almost gonna kill Silhouette, and da 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 da. And all he was looking for was to, you know, ask a few questions. It's just so forced, the whole Punisher angle.
He doesn't know how to talk to people.
Well, in contrast, we then see the rest of the New Warriors get their butts handed to them by like four C to D level rebranded villains that become the force of nature. So, I mean, I get the thing of like, oh, they need to learn to work together and all that. But it did seem like, so Night Thrasher can take on the Punisher, no problem. But the rest of them can't handle, like, the plant man, sentient plant come to life. Like an inhuman, you know, water wizard.
Yeah, I always wondered what happened to that guy. I just figured Scourge got him, but no.
Yeah, you have the, it's funny that they have the Whirlwind knockoff. And I'm like, you're inserting an inhuman into that? Like, nowadays people would be like, oh, I can't believe you're doing this. And I'm like, oh, no, they did it back then, too.
I like the whole series of character moments prior to their encounter with the Force of Nature, where they're just like going through the jungle in their bright costumes and stuff, and Marvel Boy's talking about his telekinetic sheath that protects him. Except it lets the STDs right through, unfortunately. But and then Fabian has vaguely like catch our eye with this sweaty, full-on shot of Namorita. Right? And then unloads this whole social political tirade about like the plight of the Amazon's mismanagement and stuff. Yeah. And it's like she's gasping for air, saying she's a little dizzy in one panel, and then she's addressing the United Nations in the next.
I know.
The other thing I'm on the fence on, and I wanted your guys take, is they made a very clear effort to theme the Force of Nature's outfits to match. Like, it's like, you know, they have this lined with horizontal line and then plates and alternating colors. I don't think it was my thing. I think I like more when people just wear random outfits. Not that there isn't a place like the original X-Men and New Mutants, but I also liked when they then spread off and had their own outfits.
I just don't think that character and costume design have really ever been Bagley's strong suit. The Force of Nature here could be Exhibit A, Nova, Kid Nova's costume, Exhibit B. He's just not ever really been a costume design guy.
Well, I will say that, like I said, as before, I think Speedball is great in all these panels, and he's my favorite depiction, but they find out that Speedball's mom has fallen in with this group, so they agree to work with them. And then we cut to some of our other long-running plots. And I think I mentioned this last time, but the White Queen's outfit is so...
Still.
Right? They're, to the character, to the costume design again. Is she wearing tights or not, Andrew? Is she wearing boots or not?
So one leg is fully covered and the other isn't with a boot. And it just looks... off. But I notice when she next appears on a cover, they have her in a symmetrical outfit for the rest of the time. It's a scoop, but she's trying to find out. The New Warriors recruited, obviously, Firestar, one of Spider-Man's amazing friends. But in the comic books, she was linked to the opposite of the New Mutants, the Hellions, which the White Queen did, which I thought was a clever, like, I thought it was funny. They had Professor X has his group of young mutants. They have theirs. I thought that was a nice symmetry and made sense.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants matched the X-Men.
Exactly. And that was the era then when the New Mutants started. It was like Professor X and Emma chasing after New Mutants and each recruiting them to their own school where they would eventually face off against each other here and there, sometimes trying to recruit the next New Mutant or whatever. But Emma won the Firestar sweepstakes.
But I feel like the New Mutants had continued to evolve and moved into their own independence, where we're going to see the Hellions have still do the matching outfits and all that stuff. Plus the mysterious Lady Apocalypse in Egypt.
Is that what you're calling her?
Yeah, she reminds me of Apocalypse with the Egyptian iconography.
So I guess I should mention these ads because they're the same ones that go through all the issues, so I won't continue mentioning them. But they have a Silver Surfer video game ad. Never played this game.
Oh, it was
saw
great.
It on YouTube.
It was great.
Apparently it's a hard game.
It was.
But see if you remember these characters. Do you know who the possessor is? How about Reptilia? I'm like, who are these guys that are in this game? That goes into Mephisto, Fire Lord, and Emperor in this ad. And Emperor is a Skrull.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, in the next issue, they have like a Silver Surfer high score contest. And then you can win like some jet ski. And it's like the happiest Silver Surfer going through the cosmos on his jet ski. And then they have a Mega Man 3 ad in here, which is pretty great because it's just like, hey, it's Mega Man 3. Do you have any other questions? And at that time, no, I did not. I was totally down.
I thought you'd be more into this Egyptian subplot because there are an awful lot of cats in the hieroglyphics, Kevin.
Oh, there always has to be cats, doesn't there?
You're a big cat man.
That's a different pod.
I love Egyptian motif stuff, Egyptian stories, ancient Egyptian architecture and culture and style and all that stuff. Ever since I was a kid, love that stuff, pyramids and all that crap.
Stuff like that is like, you see crazy stuff in comics and you see the Egyptian stuff and it's like comic stuff in real life. So you're like, otherworldly, like fantasy sci-fi stuff, when you see crazy other, like real world stuff, sort of like wrestling.
Ancient Egyptian wrestling.
Egyptian wrestling, obviously people's interest, right?
I can barely tell the difference.
A crossover audience there.
But one of my favorite segments, because this feels very 80s, is the Punisher analyzes Night Thrasher's armor. So it's a lot of like the old official handbook type stuff where his scanners are looking at his armor and where does he stow his, you know, little climbing gear and where does he stow his mace and black pepper and
it's totally that pre-internet depiction of computer use though, right? Where you just plug in beep boop 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 and it's like the back computer spits out like a spectral analysis of the layers of this guy's armor and the makeup of the materials based on just some video shot from like, you know, a black and white security camera.
Don't you feel like this went away though? Because I remember like thinking in the last 10 years, like someone's using this and I'm like getting so excited by like seeing all this, like, oh, they zoom in or they show all this stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, this is like newish, and then you go back to these issues and it's like the issues I read when I was first reading, I'm like, it had all that stuff. So I'm like, did I just forget? Like some of these issues have more of that stuff that I like nowadays when people do it. It's just weird.
You have to save, like, I feel you have to save something for depictions of the future, Kevin. Like, what are they going to do on Star Trek what kind of thing, you know, they have to be able to do, like, well, look, we can just video this and tell everything that's in it. And you're like, ooh, all right. Wow, the future.
I know. But this is also great because he doesn't know what's in this one compartment on Night Thrasher's back. And I'm like, this sets up, like, one of my favorite moments in these three issues.
Oh, that's his back? I thought it was, like, his crotch piece. I was like...
No! So the Punisher is like, well, I figured out, the adamantium alloy. And he goes, but what's over there? What's happening? And we'll find out.
Will we?
We will.
Well, I'm a fan of the... Because I feel this is very old school comics where it's the cutaways and you kind of look and you get to see all the different pockets. And it adds a sense of, I feel it's the best done in comics with the sort of inserts and all that. I mean, you could have like a video, like if it was a movie, I don't think it would be as interesting to me. But I like how they kind of have the circles and the zoom ins and all that without rocking it through. I don't know. I just feel like it's a great comic book device that could be used more often.
It would probably be some kind of hologram or something in a movie.
Yeah, but it's not as, I don't know, I just feel like they can give you an awful lot of information, and it gives, even though it's not realistic, it adds a realistic element, almost like, oh, they're explaining everything and they're giving us rules and what he has and what he doesn't have, as opposed to the really old days when Batman could just pull anything out of that utility belt.
Also, editorially, I find it kind of charming that they're really flaunting that, like, we can do different fonts, right? So yes. They have the regular comic font, and then they have the Punisher's thought caption boxes font, and now with these cutaways and stuff, they have a third font.
But you see Punisher, he's making fun of Night Thrasher's name, and I'm like, but you're the Punisher.
I know, right?
Well, Punisher is like, all these kids just don't understand.
Mr. Night Thrasher.
Well, I think, going back to the selling of it, they're still trying to market, like, these are hot young kids, and I'm like, yeah, because I'm sure a young person was thrilled with Nova, who came out in the 70s. Right? Namorita, who came out in, what, the 50s, or like, with the exception of...
It is also pre-internet magazine, I didn't get a lot of information stuff, like, I'm not even on, like, Wizard or anything, so I don't know, like, I can't tell that these aren't new characters. Like, maybe they've appeared in a few other places before, but I have no idea, like, they go back to the 50s or whatever.
No, Namorita was a late 60s, early 70s... Namor character. She was, her mother was Namora, who, she was the one from the 50s.
And we've got a bunch more from the 80s, you know, because in the 90s, the 80s was so recent. I just think it's funny that they are pitching this with some characters that have been around for a while. But anyways, that's where they're at, and I like that it's a quote-unquote young team, so I'll go with it. But now we have to cut over. And as revealed last time, why is the Bengal after the priest? Well, we find out the priest was involved in a My Lai-type massacre. Mm. And when the kid escaped, he pushed him off the helicopter, which seems... Talk about making him like an extra bad guy. That seemed like they were really putting it on the... But that's after he gets court-martialed, that spurns the man to become a priest to try and atone. Yeah. But the young kid grows up to be half tiger, half man.
Well, he also spent 25 years in Quantico, so it wasn't just like he got court-martialed. Exactly. He definitely paid his debt to society and all that, but not his debt personally to this kid.
Right. And I think the priest thing was meant to be like, oh, look, he's trying to be a good guy. And he says, you know, oh, I go to all the bad neighborhoods and try and work with people to redeem, but I don't think I can. And I get it. Look, if I had gunned down like a bunch of families, and presumably for all likelihood, if you kick a child off a helicopter, odds are they're probably not going to survive. No. Like, that doesn't seem like a high statistical likelihood. So, and then that puts Night Thrasher, and by some degree later on Punisher, in a bit of a conflict, because they're all about extracting justice
or vengeance.
They're not they're not really into redemption arcs. Yeah. Like, that's not the whole business. Their whole business is meeting out cold, hard street justice. Wow. But we've also seen Night Thrasher be a little... He's not quite the Punisher.
I like how Night Thrasher at one point realizes that he's just exactly the same as the Punisher. That's my origin!
Punisher definitely seems surprised, though, that it's like, what? They can reform?
Yeah.
I usually don't let him get that far.
Yeah, I usually gun him down on the street before we get to that point.
But then we're well-balanced to go back to Brazil and meet the force of nature, get their whole explanation of their backstories again. Terraformer was a sentient plant created by Plant Man.
Wow.
Air Dude is the former Inhuman who they make to be quite powerful, maybe the most out of all of them. Aqueduct was Water Wizard, and then we have a fire-based creature lady from Cambodia who was the victim of experimental napalm, because you know how weapons of war give you superpowers. Our kind of earth, wind, and fire.
Yeah.
And air.
Aqueduct had a pretty bad costume before, though.
Yeah, they did.
I agree, but I think the matching outfits are just not for me. And maybe, like Steve said, I'm not responding to Bagley's character designs the way I need to be.
You don't want those shades?
I just want more individuality in the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the UFOs. UFOs would have worked perfectly in this storyline. They're all about the environmentalism-y kind of stuff being used that way. But the bad guy, he's got Speedball's mom working for him as one of his cronies. So Speedball agrees to, like on behalf of the team, agrees to help them or to join up. And I'm so surprised at how quickly and happily that they cut the team free, even though like the rest of the team is pretty loudly protesting Speedball's acceptance and agreement.
Well, I feel like this leader has so much confidence that I guess he thinks that when he makes a pitch, people are just, oh my gosh, that's I never thought of it that way type of response, which I'm with you. They cut them loose quickly, but I also feel like I like that they're moving this along. I don't need 4 pages of them working it back and forth. Like, we can have the Bendis edit at a later time. I'm happy with them saying, here's the pitch, here's what we're going to do, because it keeps the story moving and grooving.
These 3-issue arcs really are refreshingly paced, aren't they?
Yeah. So you sacrifice some of the, I don't know, realism or prior, but you get the speed of it, which helps. And speaking of speed of it, when we cut back to Night Thrasher, the priest, and Silhouette, Punisher, again from his perspective, he drives his van through the church and runs into
Punisher. He's not gonna hurt them. He just drives his van right through the front of your building.
I like how he doesn't want to hurt him, even though he hits him with his van. He just wants to talk somehow.
There's pews flying everywhere. The priest is flying out of the pew he was sitting in. Silhouette, her cane's nowhere in reach. Her crutches goes flying with her leg braces and everything. And the Punisher doesn't even know about the priest's bad backstory. He thinks he's just a regular priest and he's willing to do this.
And I think the priest might have a bad back after this, too.
And like you always do when you want to talk to someone, first thing you do is put a gun to one of their heads as he takes Silhouette prisoner. I just want to talk.
After you've almost run him over.
And then, as Kevin hinted, we learn what Night Thrasher had back there, and that was a gun.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, how do we think... Clearly, the skateboard is more dangerous than the gun.
The skateboard is multifunctional.
You ever try to ride a gun?
Well, as the Punisher said earlier in the issue, once you get close, a gun is useless.
Yeah, well, it's offense, it's defense. The skateboard is everything. So I was surprised that he switch it for a gum. But yeah, it was quick. And then wham, we're right to issue 9, which again, I like the cover. I like, you're right. It's clearly related to the story because it has the Punisher and then the force of nature fighting the other one. So this isn't like they commissioned the cover, you know, 6 months ahead of time.
You know what I just realized was on the back cover of this issue? A ad for the Punisher video game, which I also never played.
I played some of the Punisher video games, but I don't know which one this would... I think I played a later one from the 2000s.
You know, guys, I think the Punisher's big because they have one of those subscription ads, and the Punisher is also on that ad.
Well, 10 starts us off. It's the... Sorry, 9. I'm getting ahead of myself. Starts off with our standoff with Thrasher pointing a gun and the Punisher's pointing a gun. And then they're smart to use Silhouette's power so she can just disapparate into the shadows. And, of course, she's nude. They need to get those unstable molecules for her, by the way.
Yeah, you can't just buy totally. Them off
but
the
then
rack.
Bagley wants to... You need someone nude at least once an issue, right?
Yeah.
I like how
she's gonna be.
I like how the Punisher's holding a gun to Silhouette's head after he's just almost run her over by crashing through a building and could have easily killed her. And he claims, "What? I'm not here to hurt the girl." She's bleeding from the mouth.
But the Punisher just. Despite admitting he could disarm the guy, decides he's going to talk.
Finally.
And throws the woman her clothes, which seems classy. I felt like that's the first thing I agreed with in this whole procedure. And then, you know, he gets filled in about the priest's backstory and finds out that Silhouette had nothing to do with her brother's gang activities. And I guess the Punisher's good at telling when people can lie or not. Because I would definitely be doing that every time the Punisher showed up. Oh, no, I'm not a drug dealer. That was someone else.
Well, he does his research ahead of time.
It's true.
Well, he didn't. His research is running a van through the church, Kevin. That's his research.
Yeah, he determined that that's where that was the church's soft spot.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's going to speed off. He's like, this is your own problem. Like, I don't know what to do about the priest. I don't know what to do about Silhouette, but I'm getting out of here. I got to go find and kill some bad guys.
Well, he's getting those flashbacks.
And then we go back to Brazil where we see a clear-cutting operation. And so the force of nature are going to not just stop the operation, but also, you know, do in all the lumberjacks.
Oh boy.
And you know, if you work for them, you have to be, since you're associated with that, you also have to be evil.
I cut down trees, I wear high heels.
But I'm like, even if they stop this, once they leave, won't the government just come back in again? So they better be toppling the government, too.
I would think
that would be a totally different comic.
Yeah, I gotta think that the lumberjacks are fairly easily replaceable, unfortunately, as someone in an easily replaceable job.
The only way to truly stop this is to just cut down the trees yourself.
So first, the New Warriors decide to just let them destroy stuff, but they'll save the worker, the lumberjacks. And then they're like, and then when that reaches the end and the lumberjacks are chased off, the leader decides that they need to have a false flag operation to show how dangerous they are. So they're going to shoot the American actress who is Speedball's mom.
No.
How stupid is that? Because he was right there to know the connection, right? And know that that was the tenuous connection. That's the only reason that the New Warriors are barely agreeing to assist them. He saw the rest of the team protest. He saw Speedball just because it's my mom, and that's the one he's going to shoot. He deserves everything that's coming to him. Poor choices.
Also, you know, maybe work out your plan ahead of time. I mean, one of these persons might have volunteered for the operation. You don't know. I mean, if they're willing to kill all these people, they might be willing to die, and then it's much better to have team buy-in. But as you know, that puts an end to it. So Robbie rescues his mom and then reveals once they're safely away that it's Robbie. I prefer Robbie as Speedball. Do not like Robbie as Robbie. Yeah, I'm one of those guys.
Oh, all right. Maybe they didn't know about the mom connection, though, because she didn't even know.
Yeah. I guess they just whispered it sotto voce. Oh, but okay. Then Lady Apocalypse, in a very revealing outfit, has her... Like, all the ladies here are dressed to impress, I guess. So we get a couple of panels of her going to absorb the energy. Maybe she's more like the living monolith or something. I don't know.
I think so.
She is that better than Lady Apocalypse?
I'd say so.
Yep.
So now we're going to have the conclusion of the Bengal Night Thrasher priest silhouette business.
I'm rooting for the Bengal now.
He uses a bow and arrow now.
I still root for him.
And he's got the Psy, and he and Night Thrasher are fighting, and Night Thrasher barely beats him, almost to a standstill, because the Punisher and the Bengal are about equivalent on the scale of fighting.
The thing is about these issues, it's like, always look out for your window, because there's always shattered glass going flying all over the place.
But I do enjoy the fight, actually. I like martial arts style fights. I think the Bengal is a fun design. I mean, it's a goofy character, but the stripes with the Psy. And, like, it's just good, old-fashioned, fighty comic books. So, all goofing on some of the plot points aside, I like their little battle. And it's pretty brutal, too, with, like, blood.
You don't want to be inhaling that pepper.
Yeah, so he gives him a cayenne face blast. And then the Punisher steps in to, like, put a gun on both of them and be like, okay. I have to get involved. I know I said I wasn't going to be involved, but I have to get involved. You two, you're like me. We're a family.
And they established the whole cayenne pepper spray in the gauntlet earlier when the Punisher looked him up and did the whole schematic on the computer. A little clever foreshadowing there.
Yeah, when Punisher is your negotiator, you have a situation.
But they reconcile, which I thought was nice. I was pleased with that. It's a nice contrast to the Punisher.
Bengal never says a word. He just cries.
Yep.
Yeah, but I thought, I don't know. I was happy with the outcome. Plus, I think they want to establish that Night Thrasher has a road to not become the Punisher. I think they want to have him walk that line, not be totally over it. Because otherwise, they already have that, and it's going to create problems with the more regular superheroes. You can have them be the Wolverine, the Raphael, the whatever pushing the edge, but you don't want them to fall over it, I feel like, from a balance perspective. So, then we go back to Speedball and Robbie, and I got to say, the mother is absorbing a lot. I mean, first of all, she fell into some weird cult that was going to murder her. And then her son is a superhero who came down and rescued her. Like, that's a lot to take in on a Tuesday.
He's always looking at it, Robbie.
But they go back and take out the bad guys. And Cord is with this team. And Cord is the male father figure for Night Thrasher. But it's a fun battle. Like, everyone using their powers. Close quarters. They're starting to team up. They're starting to work together, Steve.
Yep.
Talking about stupid bad guys, though, Aqueduct shoots water at Namorita. What is happening there?
That's his thing. That's his move.
He needs to tell the fire person, can we switch off?
Yeah, well, this is a more closely, the New Warriors would do that. They would say, hey, let's switch off. But nope, not these guys.
And then the one guy that was like the sentient plant becomes like... That's what I was wondering. He's a plant... And he chooses to be like a human form dude, and now he's back to like some weird, like mushy plant thing. And it seems like Firestar is always like in 9 issues, he's like, did I kill this guy? And then in issue 10, it's like, did I kill another guy? It's like she's always worried about killing people.
I don't blame her.
Didn't we learn that Plant Man is actually a plant somewhere along the line away?
Well, we learned that Swamp Thing was Steve. So I think it makes sense that Plant Man joins the team. So I do like that we're not sure if he's gone or not. And that's the fun of having supervillains yeah. like that. Like, maybe he's gone forever, or if some other writer wants to be like, oh no, he, you know, transferred his consciousness to a pod and grew up or whatever. I like that it leaves it open for future use, because it was a fun character.
So there's a bullpen bulletins in here, and the Hulk is year 1991, and he's kicking 1990 out of the way, which is the Grim Reaper. Mm.
Take that, 1990.
Exactly. Was 1990 a bad year? It's the Grim Reaper? Like, is this supposed to mean something? Anyhow.
Well, that leads us, as we previewed, Emma Frost's team, the Hellions, who were the New Mutant equivalents, except they wore pink outfits. And Firestar being a former member, you know, that's going to be part of it. And for a while, what I didn't like was when they were trying to do, like, kind of matching with the New Mutants. So they have a person that turns into an animal, this time a cat instead of a wolf. Cat. And they have, like, a speedster and a, like, a strong guy and those sort of things. So I wasn't always enamored with that sort of matching. Like, you don't need to have the direct equivalent. But I had forgotten about the Hellions when I read this. And then so I was pleased to see them. I'm like, oh, that's right. This is before they were all ceremoniously disposed of, which I thought was a little rash. But we have the speedster, the one that turns into a cat who speaks funny, the tarot who can summon tarot.
Yep. See,
the big strong guy.
They were matches to the original New Mutants. So she was, Tarot was the match to Mirage.
Yeah. So I feel like, do we need this? No. But they're still fine characters.
You know, spoilers, you gotta Andrew. Some of them show up in X-Force later on. They didn't all die.
Well, but the team,
at least. They should have.
Ate it. We can agree with that, right? The yes. team no longer.
The team yeah. concept was destroyed.
I love that school rival. It sounds like a very... manga thing to do, to have rival schools and everything.
I don't like that they shoot the old woman in the brain so much that, like, her whole skull disappears and you, like, see her brain for a second. That looks like a real hard shot.
They might yes. need to, though.
Well, what's interesting is they'd hinted that this lady that was the maternal side, although not that maternal, for Night Thrasher, had something about her, and yeah. now we see she was able to hold off in a standoff against the Hellions, and it took the White Queen showing up to sort of square out the odds. And so we're like, oh, this lady has some power.
And what then, is up there?
And then issue 10, I can see why Kevin, oh, yeah. why Steve jumped back in, because it's the White Queen, but wearing a symmetrical outfit that you are not going to find in the body of this, but all the classic cover where all the heroes are lying knocked out and the villain stands above them. Like, we've seen that in loads, and it's a good, I don't mind it. It's not like I'm objecting to those covers that are fun.
It's a good cover.
Yep. It also has 50 years of Captain America on the corner.
So, suddenly, Silhouette and Night Thrasher return. But Night Thrasher's got, like, broken ribs and bandages, and the Hellions all jump on top of him right away. But they still do pretty well for, you know, a beat-up Night Thrasher.
I like how Night Thrasher just throws his helmet. Like, it just reminds me of a Bullseye thing, like, anything is a weapon.
Yeah, well, he's a tough guy, although it ends when the big beefy guy is like, hey, if you don't, White Queen's like, if you don't give up, your housekeeper and your girlfriend will be dead.
At least they get a signal out, though.
But I liked it. Like, again, Night Thrasher, they couldn't stop him. Like, all you know, six Hellions and the White Queen could not stop one dude with a skateboard. But we get it. He's really tough. But
yeah, he's a Night Thrasher.
He's been trained by Black Cable.
And he's so tough, the White Queen can't even telepathically read. I just feel like they're really overselling that this dude is Batman mixed with James Bond, mixed with mental power. Because the mental, you know, impossible, the White Queen. You know, he has mental barrier. And it's like, does this guy have any weaknesses?
Well, it's because of a housekeeper that he has a mental product. He must have got the training there, I'd imagine.
Telling you, trained by Black Cable.
I don't know if you've noticed, but the new Warriors, when they're coming home, Namorita used to have that bikini, and now it looks like when they got on the plane, she's like, I really need to change into something less revealing now that we're not down south anymore.
Well, I also believe that she probably has multiple outfits and it got damaged because you see Firestar is fixing Vance Astro's outfit. So, you know, it makes sense that things get ripped up and they're having...
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to rip up.
They're having their character moments, and that's when Cord, again, notices that the alarm has been triggered. So they need to get into action.
Cord. It really is Black Cable.
But Robbie's mom doesn't want him involved, and he's like, Mom, I'm a superhero, I can handle this, in that kind of whiny teenage way that he does. And so they're all gonna go attack, and their attack is my favorite, where Nova just throws Speedball at them.
That's because he can't control himself, so it's actually a funny and good, like, random element.
Oh, yeah, I like it. And then the classic, as Kevin noted, with their windows and New Warriors, let's kick some glass in.
I laughed out loud when I saw Nova do that. I'm like, just like, yeah.
Yep.
And then I love, it's just pages of, like, lots of panels and people fighting and crossing into other battles and everything. Well done for me. This is what I like. This lots kind of fighting, where you get everyone's kind of power set. And again, the underlying story is Firestar's old team. So she's kind of, she doesn't want to go back, but she's a little bit more conflicted, I would say.
She knows them. They're not strangers to her.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And then basically, the housekeeper comes to, we're not going to call her the housekeeper, are we? That's what the White Queen refers to her as. And then they're like, and she's like, look, I'm not going to help these people. They need to, you know, she's basically, she should be Lady Apocalypse because she has kind of a survival of the fittest. So the two of them decide to let the teams fight it out and they're going to tally up the scores. And this is another superhero thing, like, where it's like, you know, it's got to be close. Like, there's going to be, this team gets one, the next team gets one, there's a tie, all that. Like, even before you read it. But that's fine. I love the classic. How is it going to go?
Yeah. We also see Marvel Boy and Firestar testing some of their power limits here. And some of their strategies.
And Tara was a really fun character because she generates characters from the tarot thing. So there's always fun visual elements. But it's the back and forth. But then at the end, the New Warriors end up winning by one. It's like the Games Master should be here.
And funny so you should say that.
The White Queen, you know, dismisses her claim.
We got a bullpen Boltons here of Star Fox for Valentine's Day, too.
You know, that's just how the Punisher left, too, right? He just, like, gave up his... All right. You guys got the upper hand on me, so I'll just give up my claim, and similar to the White Queen.
Yeah, it was interesting how, but I like it. Like I said, I had a fight, an interesting thing. Like, all the elements were fine with me. I was good with it, and then it ends with them kind of, like, they won, but not overwhelmingly so.
And then we get to Steve's favorite page before his favorite New Warriors comic of all time.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool... It reminds me of, like, Frankie Ray. Like, our living monolith lady really is getting absorbed in the power. So it's a very cool scene of, like, all the, you know, like, weird letter sound effects and Kirby crackle and flashing and all kinds of cool stuff. I like that panel because it leads you like, oh no, this is going to be a big bad. Clearly, it'd be funny though if she didn't show up for another like 75 issues. He just kept.
I think that's like a Peter David X Factor thing where he's building up this guy and then like he keeps on screwing up or like at this time I'm going to get there and he never really gets there.
That next arc is a good one, and then I stuck with it for those three issues, and then the Darkhawk appearance in issue 14, and then the next issue I bought of the New Warriors wasn't until issue 39.
Wow.
That's the Namorita and Nova kissing on the cover, Jerick Robertson cover.
It's a good cover.
It is. But before we get to those next issues on the next installment of covering the New Warriors on Marvel Noise, there chronologically is a four-part crossover between annuals that was done that summer, which in some ways we could kind of gloss right over without much notice, except for the fact that the main creative team handled the New Warriors segment of this, which really made it seem like it was part of the regular narrative, you know?
And we've already established that like there is some kind of connective tissue between X stuff and New Warriors stuff.
The Firestar connection.
Yeah.
But I do feel it's included in the omnibus here. And I got to say, I'm all in favor of a quick one. I read through these. I found them inexplicably dense. I think the big problem is they're like four giant team books, which creates way too many players.
Yeah, of course.
So it's really hard to have 25 heroes in a book, plus all their supporting casts and everything. It just creates a mess. And I also, while I enjoyed some of the annual crossover things, I was generally not happy with it because I felt like you oftentimes had to buy these annuals that maybe you were reading, maybe you weren't, to sort of get the complete story.
Right.
And I was not a huge fan of the, even when it worked, I guess I was okay with it, but nah.
So annuals used to just be like the oversized summer special for each title. And they would come and go, and in the early 80s, they really became a staple, where just about every title had an annual, at least the main, you know, ongoing Marvel Universe-type characters, titles, I should say. And then in the late 80s, they got into this thing of having them be a giant crossover. Right, Secret Wars and all that stuff was so popular. How do we do the big crossovers and everything? Well, one way we could do them was we could do them in the annuals. And they did that with the Atlantis Attacks, right? And what was the other one? Evolutionary War, right? There was a few of them. And then they decided, well, that takes a lot of work. So why don't we break things down into like smaller groups and have crossovers between those, because now it's been established and it's almost an expectation that the annuals are going to be crossovers. But now they decided to break them down into smaller subgroups of crossovers. So this was the Kings of Pain storyline in the 1991 annuals for New Mutants Annual 7, New Warriors Annual 1, X-Men Annual 15, and X-Factor Annual 6. The New Mutants Annual 7 was written, they're all written by Fabian Nicieza, with art in this New Mutants Annual by Guang Yap, with inks by Dan Panosian.
Yeah.
And I really like Dan Panosian. I mean, so if I say some uncharitable things, I want it known that I like Dan Panosian.
But you have Mignola covers on these.
Yeah, Mike Mignola covers. The best of which is when it's just Mignola inks over Bagley on the New Warriors annual cover, I think. Because this is, I mean, Mignola's pretty heavily stylized by this time.
Yeah. I never bought these because I was still getting New Warriors like back issues, so annuals were not a high priority. So I was only on to the New Warriors annuals with the next year, which makes sense because I was buying like the Spider-Man annuals. So once we get to the next cycle of annuals, they rope Spider-Man in. So then I'm definitely there. Like I'm all in.
What I liked about the annuals at this time when they did the crossovers, it never lasted through the whole annual. The story, because it's broken up between four annuals, it's like, hey, we're not trying to write too much of an epic here.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the issue would be filled with the back matter, and that's the stuff that I loved about Marvel annuals, when there was lots of good juicy back matter, backup stories, power charts, the cutaways, hideouts, villain galleries, all that stuff, and we get a nice array here, especially in the New Warriors annual. But what's going on is that there's this armored harness character, which Mignola depicts really cool on each of these covers, I should say. And this harness character with the armor is leading this kid around called Piecemeal, and he's really authoritarian to the kid and really mean, forcing him to absorb power. He's like a mutant of some kind, and when he absorbs the power, it makes him gain weight, so he's slowly like becoming obese.
And really, did he need a code name? Couldn't they just go by the kid's first name?
So the New Mutants here are really, I mean, they're X-Force. They just haven't changed titles yet, so they're the soon-to-be X-Force, led by Cable and everything, and they encounter them, this harness and Piecemeal, while fighting, and they are all being manipulated by two shadow individuals who are playing chess that they keep showing throughout all the issues, and the whole thing leads to them storming a facility where they encounter the New Warriors when the issue ends. New Warriors Annual 1 is, like we said, written by Nicieza with art by Bagley and Albright. And there's a nice big fight to start with, and then they reason that they've been set up, and then they team up, right? That's how it goes.
Of course, you always have the misunderstanding.
But as Kevin hinted at, I didn't mind the full body outfit of Namorita. I actually think it's fine, but they gave her like a weird neck piece that is just random. And I'm like, we still need someone to work on this. And now Silhouette is just being, she's now part of the team. She's somehow, without like a formal kind of welcome aboard, she kind of just sort of osmosed her way into the team. And I would have liked to seen a like welcome to the, like, it's a new enough thing that I like the old traditional, like, well, now you're part of the blah blah blah, you know.
She,
what I mean,
yep, she kind of dominoed onto the team,
you know? I like that
the harness armored character keeps getting Piecemeal fattened up, and the teams at the end learn that AIM is trying to bring back Proteus, the old uncanny Uh-oh. X-Men villain, the son of Moriah McTaggart, who is the the reality manipulator, who's kind of vampiric at the same time, right? He sucks the bodies out of the people he inhabits, and his weakness is metal. Colossus ended him a long time ago, maybe even more than once. But
man, that's a weird team we get in this next annual here, the X-Men one.
Wait a sec, Steve. When you said his weakness was metal, I thought you meant like Black Sabbath. And
that is his weakness. You just got to play it like rock out. Before we jump to the other annual, though, the back matter in the New Warriors annual is really fun. I like that they do a series of like three or four pagers that are drawn by Tom Morgan that show really nice recaps of the comic book history of each of the characters in the New Warriors who do have histories, like Speedball. Where the heck did he come from? It tells you what the deal was with those Ditko appearances of Speedball. And Namorita, what's her deal? And it goes back to explain where she came from and that she was living in Lemuria with Namora, and that after that all went to hell, Namor gave her to Prentice, right? His relative from his human side, and that's why she grew up like living on land and everything. And except that Prentice, her adopted mother, was killed by, guess who, Andrew? It's Doc Dorcas.
Oh, no.
You can't mess with him.
The unfortunately named Doc Dorcas. We just talked
about him. You know, those aren't in order in the omnibus. They put that material after the crossover.
And they go through the whole history of Nova and what went on with him and all those kooky villains that were in Nova's rogue gallery and the Sphinx and him going off to Xandar and fighting with Rom. And even on the Marvel Universe reprint of this, they show Rom and they name Rom, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's only one panel, they usually reprint it.
Not thrilled with the super bulked out Nova. They went for a guy that hit the gym.
Yeah, but as far as a reader wanting to learn about the histories of these characters, yes, I like this better than having a... This is a cooler way to have an info dump, because they actually do
It
is actually a little narrative for a couple of pages, and it hits all the points of who these guys are, which is cool.
And Mega Man's in here. Copyright pending.
This was definitely a good use of the space, and it's fun. And like you say, they can just keep it quick. You don't need to have everything. Just what's their beginning, what are some highlights, and where'd they end up?
And it's more than I expected, though.
Advanced plot story, too.
They could have made it even more sparse and simplistic, their histories, but they included some fun facts. They didn't include references, would have been nice, but I knew.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, these bits were better than the Kings of Pain main story.
Yeah, agreed. X-Men Annual 15 is part 3 of the Kings of Pain, and it's drawn by a young Tom Rainey with inks by Joe Rubinstein and company, and you can really tell when it's the N company. This is a screwy X-Men team circa X-Men 275. It's the strong man Lorna Dane, not Magnetic, not Polaris Lorna Dane.
What?
And Madrox. And,
what? Why is he still in the costume from like early 80s?
He lived on Muir Island, and that's where this team is. Like, the X-Men thought they were gone, so the Muir Island gang comes together, led by a Shadow King tainted Moira McTaggart with a...
So that's why she's wearing an X-Men costume and has guns?
A big gun and crazy hair and Siren, Banshee's daughter, before she would kind of come back to the fold and join X-Force and stuff, and Legion.
What? What's Legion doing here? Well, I mean, Reality Warper versus Reality Warper, okay.
He was doing therapy there, was what he was
doing. Okay.
And they also really hulk out, like... Polaris and McTaggart, like characters I don't traditionally think of as like really hit the gym in the 90s.
Well, Lorna was She-Hulky right at this time, though, so she gets the excuse. But Moira McTaggart, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Like, so everyone is, even Siren's pretty gunned out. So I did not like this one. Had probably what I consider some of the sort of 90s excesses of over musculature and goofy poses. Like, they go, suddenly Namorita is now in a weird two-piece again with like like a thong bottom and everything. Like, just weird.
The three, changes often.
This X-Men team and the New Warriors and the X-Force New Mutants take on Harness and Piecemeal, but Piecemeal reaches critical mass. He's just growing ever so huge. It's like the Mr. Creosote section of the Monty Python Meaning of Life, where they're in the restaurant and he just has that wafer-thin, one more wafer-thin after-dinner mint, and boom, Piecemeal explodes and somehow becomes Proteus.
Are we going to talk about this coloring at some point?
Go for it.
It reminds me of that X-Force issue where, or they try, I forget what the reason, I know I've heard it, where it wasn't like, it wasn't supposed to be the final coloring, but that's the coloring they went with. Like, I feel like this is the same thing here, where you're just having a lot of reds, blues, and purples on just like random things. And it's like, what is happening? Why are sometimes multiple pages are just the same three colors?
I don't like the we have a lighting effect. Like it was in the last one too. Like they're in a helicopter, so everything's going to be red. Or they're in this, so everything's yellow. And I get the point, like, hey, you know, here's our light source and everything would be tinged this way. But I don't need any of that. Like, just go with regular coloring. Maybe give a hint of that. But you're right, it kind of washes everything.
Yeah.
And it seems like an extreme.
Like, there was a period where I think they were just like, oh, we got to have only, like serious colors. We can't use any of these wild covers. This all has to be pretty plain. And then, like, the colors have come back again. But I feel like when people choose colors nowadays, there's more of a... I won't say a thought process, because I'm sure someone's like, hey, this would look cool or whatever. But it seems like, yeah, it doesn't block anything else out, or it doesn't like take away from like the artwork.
The conclusion of this hot mess happens in X Factor Annual 6 with art by Terry Shoemaker and Al Milgram.
I will say. One last thing, just to give them credit. I do like the Harness armor. They have a few sequences where, again, they do cutaways and show all the different things. And there's a fun sequence where they're trying to test their limits of their power. So there are some fun action. I just thought it was a mess narratively and didn't understand sometimes what was going on.
Yep. This time, X-Factor is the pre Peter David time, so when they were the reunited original X-Men. They've already met Apocalypse, and the Angel has already become Archangel. So X-Factor's called in, and they encounter this combined Proteus Piecemeal character. And I guess now we know why he's called Piecemeal. And Moira is one mom. He's got her trapped in one hand, and then Harness is got no mask and is in his other hand. That's Piecemeal's mom. That was his mom all along, who was talking so cruddy to him and treating him so lousy and dragging him along on a harness.
And what was her end game in this, Steve, again?
I don't know. To have Proteus be reborn for AIM? X-Factor can't defeat Proteus. The New Warriors and X-Force are brought in. They are wrestling whether that they have to, like, euthanize Proteus and kill him or try to help this Proteus Piecemeal amalgamation. Ultimately, they just end up having a good old discussion with him and talking him into just ceasing to be. I swear to God.
It was pretty dark. Like, and they rightly point out that, like, oh, we're killing this guy by convincing him to kill himself. And so it's interesting. The one part I also liked was the seeing who lined up on the let's, much like our Avengers Kree decision, like which heroes are going to decide to kill them and which ones are going to not decide they don't have to kill him.
It's pages and pages of them wrestling with it and then, you know, laying it on Proteus. Oh, and the shadowy chess players are revealed to be Gideon. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
What a story contrivance he was. And Toad. Toad plays chess.
What? It seems like the game master should be involved, Steve.
Toad was always traditionally a big mastermind behind the scenes player, Steve. Remember from his original appearance, he was the... I didn't get how they were triggering this. Like, do they have a power that lets them... Because they would say, like, oh, we're now going to do this. And it's like, does Gideon have a superpower that makes it happen when he says so or something?
I totally agree. It was like they were behind it all, but were doing nothing but playing chess. It was pretty funny.
That's Gideon's superpower.
I just want to say, Steve made this sound way more sensical. I read it. I was like, "What? How did they make this happen? What's her motivation?" Like, I was really, like, visually it was fine, but this was a real head scratcher of, "What? Well, why are they? There must be something I'm missing for why half this thing, why the characters act the way they do, and what's going on?" And yeah, it really left me confused. So thank you, Steve, for explaining it to me.
Maybe you should read the other annual crossovers right around this time to see if they match up with how nonsensical this one was.
I liked the matching cover design element. I liked the room for lots of backup stories. And if that was happening in the other annuals at this time, then I'll definitely check it out. It's better than the annuals where they had the thing with the trading card that came in each one, and each annual had to introduce a new character. And not just a new character that was going to be just in the annual, but a new character that was really going to stick around, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Right. Did anyone calculate the odds in how many of those characters actually became, like, characters that anyone wanted to use?
Next week on Marvel Noise.
Well, again, I think some of it was also just they picked four big teams, and that's too many people. Like, if this had been...
But
one
that's
or two,
why
like...
I liked Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War, because there was tons of characters together.
Yeah, but, you know, some artists do a better job at drawing the big groups than others, and Bagley's one of those guys who can draw a lot of characters together and still sort of make them seem like there's room and space, and some other artists really, it's just clumps of characters everywhere.
Yeah, I thought
Bagley would do an annual at all if he's just doing the regular books, but he's like a machine.
I thought visually, except for some of those stylistic, the thongs and everything, I was happy with it. But yeah, I think it's hard because you can only pick like three people to give story arcs to or whatever in this. And but yeah, interesting. I mean, I'm glad we didn't make it its own episode because I'm enjoying everything. And there were parts that I liked, but ending, like, having that be the only thing we did would have been not satisfying to me.
No, that's why I wanted to just breeze through them during this segment. And that leaves us to have the next one be the Sphinx storyline. So let's...
Oh, it's like that was the plan all along.
It's like, you know, the sooner we go to bed, the sooner we wake up and it's going to be Christmas, so... Let's wrap this episode up. Thank you guys for coming on and spending some of your quarantine time with me going over these issues.
Hopefully, when this is over, we'll all be out of quarantine.
We can all come and visit the bunker and we can be locked in here together.
Who knew the bunker would be so helpful?
All right, until we learn that we're all pawns... Until we learn
Gideon's game?
Yes. Until we learn that we're all just pawns in Gideon's game, make mine Marvel. Later.